Do I sound like the chick on the voicemail thing, or is it like, please enter your password?
When you say it that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Can I just do the podcast with someone else?
Yes.
Yeah.
The what's her name from Halo? Cortana.
You kind of sound, yeah.
I sound like Cortana? All right. I'll be Cortana.
Yeah.
Chief, can you hear me?
Hey there, welcome to The Horrible Show, the video game podcast for HorribleNight.com. This is the episode for Wednesday, December 22nd. Our video games of the year discussion for the Grimmies, as we like to call them. And tonight, joining me to have this very intellectual discussion, I'm sure, is our core podcast crew, starting with Cole out in California.
I'm not very intellectual.
Ethan, who doesn't have a C in his name, in Indianapolis.
I used to have a C in my name. It was Ethak.
And Christina, also in Indianapolis.
Christina greets you this fine evening.
From space, or from your local DJ sample disc. I don't know what DJs do. And I'm your host, Justin, Gamertag J Devil. Thanks for joining us tonight. Like I said, we're going to be breaking down all of our favorite games of the year and some of our least favorite games of the year and any other games that came out this year. But before we get started, we'll dive into our threesomes of the week, where everybody has listed off three pieces of media that have had their attention in the past week, and then our on-the-spot question to get us warmed up, our games of the year discussion covering underperforming games, overperforming games, and our games of the year. And then HorribleNight.com updates, and then last-minute industry shout-outs. So let us get going with Coleman Monroe's threesomes of the week.
So I don't know if anybody in this internet roundtable has heard of Banksy before, but he's a street artist, and they made a movie about him earlier this year. He took footage from this French guy named Terry and made a movie about street art and the different people around. It's called Exit Through the Gift Shop, and it is on the Netflix streaming right now, and I recommend it. It's pretty cool. You know, the guy that Shepard Fairey, the guy that made the Obama picture, the red, white, and blue Obama picture, there's a little bit on him in there, and it's just kind of cool looking at the graffiti and the different street art that they do. Next, my friend David McMillan has a new band. It's called Fort Francis. And if you're kind of into, like, they label it as indie rock on their Facebook page, so I'm going to go with that. And
play some Dave.
Play some Dave, yeah. Check it out. It's pretty cool. So they have a Facebook page, Fort Francis. And Francis is spelled with a E, not an I. And then the last thing, last game. Well, not the last game I played, but my last threesome was with the bag of Doritos and their game, and their game called Crash Course, which I'm embarrassed to admit that I kind of like. It's a Wipeout style game, and you're running through this obstacle course, and I think it controls terribly. Some people have said it's pretty good, but it's very frustrating and in a Trials HD sort of way. And it's an easy 200 points if you have the patience to get all 200.
Is it free?
It is free.
And I think they released, didn't Doritos release two games?
Yeah, the other one's called Harm's Way, I think, and it's a racing game where you could either be the truck, the racer, or you could be these turrets that they have placed throughout the course and shoot the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting. I don't know what I'm going to say. It's kind of an interesting dichotomy of being a truck and being a turret. Like, and you can switch, you know, you're not stuck as one turret the whole race, so you can switch through the course. So it's not like you're just waiting in one spot for the cars to come back around. So it's interesting, but it's not that great.
I think it's funny that you use dichotomy in the description of a Doritos chips racing game.
I told you
I'm not very intellectual.
Well, we've all been reading Gift Horse posts, and it's helping all of our vocabularies, I think.
That's right.
Ethan, what about you?
I don't know why I watch this, but well, yeah, I do, because I hate Michael Moore. Michael Moore Hates America is a documentary by a guy named Michael Wilson who loves America, and it's just kind of about how Michael Moore basically just hacks the crap out of footage to kind of get his point across, and I think it's interesting because I think a lot of people are pretty, you know, hateful on America, and I really don't know why, especially when they benefit quite a bit from America. And I'm not, you know, a liberal, and I'm not a conservative. I feel like I'm in the middle, and this movie kind of is that way as well. It's just not, you know, hating on us at every step of the way. So
stop hating.
I know. It drives me. It's like all the hipster kids on the planet love Michael Moore because they're like, I hate America. And there's why. I mean, you know, we do some stupid stuff sometimes, but freaking we're America. We do whatever we want.
Holy political statements on the podcast, Batman.
Oh, I know. They're calm not down. That political.
No, I think you should make a documentary called Stop Hating, honestly.
Oh, I did, but it actually ended up just being about hating things even more so. So it was pretty counterproductive. But that's all I got about that. All
right.
I played a game this past weekend called Bob Came in Pieces about a small alien in a spaceship who crash lands on another alien planet and must reassemble his spaceship. And it wasn't very fun at all.
I thought you were going to make another...
little,
Yeah, I thought you were going to make another World of Goo reference. Yeah.
No, I have nothing on this one.
At least you brought that up and set him up for it.
Yeah. Bob lands on Earth, and then he comes. Game over.
But yeah, I play a lot of violent video games, and I thought that this one was kind of cutesy looking and it kind of a puzzle game, and I thought, why not, you know, take a chance, and it was a bad chance, so chance I'll never take again. And finally, I got back into Paranormal State on Netflix because I just discovered that Netflix also offers television shows. And
you just now discovered that? I've been talking about it the whole year, dude.
I know. I was listening to a podcast one of the older ones the other day, and you guys talk about it every single week, and I just caught on to it, which shows that I'm not very intellectual and that Gift Horse posts are not affecting me much at all. So I watched a lot of that, and I actually watched so much last night that I scared myself, and then my wife got snowed in over at her parents' house. I had to sleep by myself, and it was frightening.
Oh, Ethan's scared of the dark.
A little bit.
Well, so which show is that?
I should probably explain that, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
You dicks should know it.
Let's talk about Netflix.
It's basically about this group of students at Penn State who go and investigate, supernatural situations. It's basically Supernatural, but in real life.
But that's the guy. That's the douchebag that like eggs on the ghosts, right?
No.
That's another guy. Yeah, this kid's pretty legit. His name's Ryan Buell, and I mean, he puts a lot of effort into it, and it's cool because they actually try to help the people that are involved. And I may have talked about this show before, but I like it just because you hear a lot more of the backstory. It's just not like three douchebags with big muscles go in a haunted house and get upset. I recommend that show. It's a little bit corny, but I recommend it.
I recommend trademarking that before we post the podcast.
What is that other show called then?
That's Ghost Adventures.
Oh, Ghost Adventures.
Because okay. I still watch that one. So
I like Ghost Hunters the best.
I don't know what that one is. They're all meh.
That was the one that was on Sci-Fi Channel, I believe.
I like Ghostbusters.
Well put. Thank you for saving us. Christina, who is podcasting from space tonight, what are your threesomes?
To continue, press 1. Well, I listened to, because I'm way too friggin' lazy to read anymore, I listened to the audiobook for the latest Dexter book, which was the inspiration for the series. But ever since the first book, they have been completely different. The seasons and the books do not line up at all. Anyway, this one was about cannibalism, and it was pretty friggin' out there. There was a great chapter, though, where Dexter was tripping on E, so I recommend it just for that chapter. serial killer on E. let's see, I had a little pockets of downtime, small pockets, so I wasn't really able to get on Xbox much last week, but I did download one of those free RPGs that you occasionally see ads for on these random game sites, and this one was Perfect World. Never heard of it before, and it's very monotonous, and I realized that I just play these RPGs kind of the same way someone would play Tetris. Just don't really put a whole lot of thought into it. Just kill random critters. So, I don't really recommend it.
Even for free?
It's free. Like, it'd be fun if a group, you know, if you know people on there, go for it. But by yourself, nah.
Like, what's the niche they're going for? Like,
it's very much like World of Warcraft, as far as quality goes. They do have a decent amount of quality there, but there are no quests that are very interesting, no stories. It's basically just, okay, kill 20 of these things now. Okay, kill 30 of these things now, and then go over here, go over there, and it's, I don't know. There's not a whole lot to it. So, yeah. And then for some odd reason, I had a strange urge to watch The Importance of Being Earnest, which I really can't explain why I wanted to watch that. But yeah, I watched the newer movie, and it was okay at best.
Is it a documentary on that character?
No. that would be a way better movie. I really wish it was like The Importance of Being Earnest, Scared Stupid, or
Ernest P. Worrell.
Yeah.
Jim Varney.
Yeah, Vern. So.
Yeah. So what is this one about? Because I was completely focused on.
No, the character. This was written back in like. This was written by Oscar Wilde. It's like Pride and Prejudice kind of shit. Only it's a comedy. A lot of play on words and fun with the English language, if you're into that. But it's kind of a cheesy, silly story. I wouldn't recommend it now. So basically, I don't really recommend much of anything.
It seems to be a theme in our threesomes.
Those are my threesomes. So that's so embarrassing. I'm sorry. You wanted my threesomes. Todd and Mary, a wonderful couple down the street, had a lovely threesome with them, and Colin and Timothy. Very shout out to them. Thank you very much.
That's what I'm talking about. Shout outs during threesomes. Do they all know each other?
Yes. Yeah.
Good. It's a nice neighborhood you live in.
Yeah. Just have a key party or what? Justin, save us from this.
Take it away, Justin.
Save it. My lack of comedy skills.
All right, let's go with a sci-fi horror film to tie this all together. Watched Pandorum for the second time, actually, in the past couple of weeks. One of my favorite sci-fi movies of all time is Event Horizon, and Pandorum, when that trailer came out for that, kind of reminded me of that a little bit. So I had high hopes for the movie, but actually no hopes for the movie. Because I didn't think they could get that lucky with another Event Horizon type movie where, you know, it's just a story about a big ship lost in space and whatever happens to the crew just seems kind of generic, but I actually really, really enjoyed this one. I mean, it's a really mediocre movie, but hits just the right sci-fi notes for me. It stars Dennis Quaid's in it, and then Ben Foster is in it. He's in another upcoming movie. He's in the new Jason Statham movie. Sorry, I'm all over the place. But anyway, Pandorum, not the scariest movie I've ever seen, but a pretty decent story about the end of the world, and we sent a ship out to settle a new planet that we found, and Something goes wrong on the flight out to the planet, and part of the crew wakes up after a few years of hypersleep and has to figure out what the hell's going on. And there's creatures on the ship, and then the story goes from there. So
sounds like Aliens.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely in those vein, in that vein, and you know, it doesn't do anything new or great, but it, you know, sci-fi horror movie you haven't seen before, it works. So,
how likely do you think a Pandorum scenario could occur?
How likely?
How likely would that scenario be?
I liked the whole the end of the world scenario. I mean, anything that ties into, you know, we've exhausted our planet of natural resources and we have to find someplace else to live. That stuff seems somewhat likely. The circumstances of why this trip goes awry, I didn't really buy into it too much. But it gave them an excuse to let these creatures on board, and that's what I like that. I like that stuff.
Okay, I just wonder because I have a gigantic ship that I wanted to take out. I'm just a little bit nervous about doing it. So
yeah, just test the sanity of your pilots is all I'm saying.
Okay.
So
shit.
I also can't remember if I've brought up the new My Chemical Romance album, but again, just a guilty pleasure of mine, and I can't stop listening to the album for whatever reason the past few days, and it sticks in my head, so it's worth bringing up. So track down the new My Chemical Romance album. And then game-wise, only thing I've been playing besides World of Warcraft has been Infinity Blade on the iPhone. Read Street Alchemist's review. He pretty much nailed it. But it's a lot better game than I expected. Well worth the $6. I have it on the 3GS, so it runs a little bit clunkier than it does on the iPhone 4. And doesn't look quite as sharp, but it still is the best-looking thing on my phone. And the game has enough kind of RPG leveling up elements to keep you coming back, and the battles themselves are short and quick and easy to save in between, so you can put the game, play it for long periods of time or just in short bursts. So that's just what a mobile game needs. And then I'm gonna go ahead and do a foursome because I just had sex is stuck in my head. And it's the new Lonely Island song that I think was probably on SNL this past weekend. But I think the video is hilarious, and the rest of you hadn't seen it yet, so might as well post that link. And it's not quite as good as I'm on a Boat, but I think it's their second best song and video. So enjoy that.
Even better than Jizz in My Pants?
I think so.
Whoa. I like the Natalie Portman video a lot.
Yes, I do like the Natalie Portman video. But they're like as like a pure their pure music video song. Yeah. Anyway, let's get focused on some video games. And our on the spot question this week turns the clock back to look at your top games of 2009 and wonders now that, you know, a lot of us there was games in 2009 we couldn't get to before we made our top lists back then. Now that we're a year past it, has your top games of 2009 changed at all? And actually, we'll start with Cole on this one.
My top game from 2009 is still Uncharted 2. I played a bunch of games this year from 2009, like Batman: Arkham Asylum, which I absolutely loved. It's in one of my favorite games of all time, easily. But it does not surpass Uncharted 2. So. No, my games have not changed. My top game has changed.
Where's Batman at now these days in that list?
And from 2009?
Yeah.
It's like tied at number 2, I would say, with your game that you're going to mention, Assassin's Creed 2.
Fair enough. Yeah, might as well go into mine. Thanks. No.
Sorry.
I'm going to have probably a repeat of this next year since I never got to Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, but wow. I'm so happy that I went back to Assassin's Creed. To try and catch up because that game absorbed me even more than the first one. I still would not put it in my top two. Same top two as Cole. Uncharted 2 is untouchable. Batman is game of the year any other year. But right there battling with Borderlands would be Assassin's Creed 2. What about Ethan?
Well, we'll just talk about everybody's.
we're doing great segues, though.
Yeah, that actually was a pretty good segue. Yeah, I may have to say, you know, 2009 was pretty foggy for me for a variety of reasons that we won't talk about. But Borderlands was definitely up there. But in all honesty, Uncharted 2, I kind of forgot about that. And I don't know why, but that had to be close as well. So, but yeah, Borderlands definitely for me still. Nothing's changed.
You don't even have, like, definite Uncharted 2 would have jumped to the top? Like, it didn't have that moment for you?
You know, I think that I just played Borderlands a lot longer. I beat Uncharted 2 in, like a day. You know what I mean? So, that'll tie into what we talk about later on. But, you know, it was just, not that it was short, but it just, I spent more time with Borderlands.
Gotcha. Christina?
I changed my mind so much that I guess, yeah, I can't really think of one game that I really, really loved last year. I mean, there were a lot that I liked, but none of them right now that I'm thinking of I want to go back and play. So, I mean, I really did enjoy Assassin's Creed 2. I really enjoyed Batman, but like, and same as Uncharted 2, but I don't have any desire to go back and play them. I feel like I got everything I needed from them.
Huh. Fair enough. What about where did Modern Warfare 2 rank for you? I know you played that quite a bit.
Well, I actually didn't play that until this year. I didn't get that until I think it was this summer, and I played that hardcore for a few months and then had to stop. So
had to cut yourself off.
Dude, no, there's just too many assholes on there.
The assholes are in it for everybody. Cool. Well, we're gonna jump into 2010 and. To kick things off, I kind of want to talk a little bit about how the hell we're choosing the games of the year. Really, for the site, you know, we've been talking for a couple weeks offline about all of our site-wide nominations, and we've kind of opened it up for the entire cast of The Curse to vote on their favorites. But we're going to kind of revise our nominations list here and try to finalize it to get our final votes together. And that's kind of the purpose of tonight's podcast. So we're going to have more of the kind of consensus game of the year for the site next week. You've seen already this week a few of our top 10 lists individually. So I'm kind of curious, like, what goes into everybody's heads as far as choosing their games of the year? What's the criteria there when we're, you know, when you don't have to come to a consensus with other people, just a consensus with yourself? And we'll start with Christina.
It would be the story. Like, what story was, like, blew me away, and what do I want to go back and play right now? Am I to reveal what my game of the year
is? No, nothing like that. But just like your criteria when you're, I mean, is
yeah,
story's the most important. What else comes to mind?
Story is very important. Graphics, not so much anymore. I think everyone, I have pretty high standards for graphics, and I think a lot of the games that are made today know that, you know, they have to keep up with those standards, keep up with my standards personally. Like, we gotta please Christina, man. More normal mapping. I guess just mainly story and.
Yeah, like when you're picking between, I had a lot of trouble picking, like, you know, kind of the mid range of my list, but like how, like what separates them in your head?
Puzzle games will never be at the top of my list, just because I don't know, I'm not big into puzzle games. It would have to be something big and epic, probably probably kind of like a Halo, for example. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Maybe occasionally a sequel will do it for me.
Gotcha. Ethan, what about you?
You know, a big factor is actually before you even play the game is the anticipation leading up to it. It just, you know, if I'm not super excited about a game, you know, even if it's an awesome game, I feel like it just doesn't have that same, you know, Christmas morning feel, if you will, you know, once you play it for the first time.
Huh.
After that's happened, definitely playtime. How much time am I spending with the game? You know, I picked up, you know, Dead Rising 2 was a title that, and playtime is what separates it, because Dead Rising 2 was a title that I anticipated big time, but I didn't play it as long as I thought it was going to. And I definitely have to be with the game for quite some time because I play a lot of video games. And if it can't keep my interest past, you know, I don't know, a week, then it doesn't really win out for me.
Hmm. So, I mean, how, like, to me, that makes it sound like games like Fallout are destined to always be at the top of your list versus, I don't know, I know you didn't really play Limbo, but you knew even some of the smaller downloadable games. I know you like a lot of Steam games. Do they stand a chance?
Well, yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, one of the games that I actually played a lot of was Plants vs. Zombies, and that was a puzzle game, essentially a puzzle tower defense type game, and again, that could have been ranked up there, you know, but it wasn't released in 2010, but I spent a lot of time with it. It wasn't a long game, necessarily. There was a lot of content, but it wasn't necessarily a long game. So, no, I wouldn't say that. I think Gears of War 2 is another example of a game that I played a lot of just because it held my attention.
Gotcha. Cole, what's your process?
I like to see what games stick with me when I'm not playing them. Like, you know, I'm at work and I'm thinking about a game, or waking up thinking about a game, going to sleep thinking about a game. You know, like I've said many times before, like when I was playing Mass Effect 1, I was always thinking about that game and the story and where it was going to take me and all this stuff. And I kind of agree with Christina, like the story is a big part for me too. But if I'm always thinking about it, then that's the thing that makes me consider a game for Game of the Year. And I mentioned before that I think it was in an article I wrote, actually, when it's hard to say goodbye. It's when I don't want to finish a game because I want it to, you know, last forever. I don't want to be done with it, and I don't want to be done with that universe. Then, you know, I'm going to be more considering that one as my Game of the Year.
So it's actually difficult for you to rate all of the games because some of them you don't want to quite finish.
Exactly.
I think that's also important to point out. Like, you know, we try to look at these from, you know, how we play games, and we don't finish every game. But I still think you can come to an opinion about a game after playing it for, you know, a couple decent play sessions that you have your opinion. And I think that people need to kind of accept that natural reaction a little bit more. Because you're always having to constantly choose between what games you are and aren't playing. But mine's pretty similar to Cole. Like I was going through that list, and I found myself, you know, ever since we started the site, trying to take a little bit more of a, you know, critical look at games and judge them on a variety of factors, which is fine for, like, ratings and for trying to relate it to a larger audience and step away from the game from just what you enjoyed about it. But when it comes down to a personal top 10 list for myself, I realize I don't have to rationalize this as much. You know, there were games that stood out in my head based on their impact larger than other games that I thought that I critically acclaimed. I mean, my list is on the site, and the big thing that stood out to me was, you know, I gave Halo Reach 5 stars, but it didn't make it in my top 10 just because I'm not going to remember in 5 years what year that game came out. Like, I will remember it as a good game, but I won't associate it with 2010 or my gameplay of that year, even though we talked about it quite a bit. And then there were a few games on my list that aren't, like, the most technically sound games, but God damn it, I found them fun, and I spent a lot of time with them, and that's at the end, that's what I'm kind of judging it on. It's just their impact on me, and I think that's important in those personal lists versus, like I said, we're starting this kind of community discussion to figure out as a group what we think are the best games. So that's a little bit different. But what at the end of the day, what games are you proud that you spent your time with? And that's what we're always focused on, to make sure you're not wasting time with bad video games. So. All right. What we're gonna do first here is get the bad games out of the way, but talk about some games we had some high hopes for that didn't come through and were underperformers. And Ethan's gonna kick this one off.
I went through a phase. I think I'm still going through a phase with Russian post-apocalyptic themes. And Metro 2033 was a game that I thought was gonna be similar to Stalker in terms of how open it was. Absolutely beautiful game. I mean, it really is. which actually hurt it as well in terms of underperforming, because it required so many intensive graphical settings, and I mean, I have a pretty powerful computer, and it didn't even do the game justice. You know, on top of that, it just had so much potential to allow you to explore this, you know, unbelievable world that they developed, and yet it was very like a hand-holding experience. You know, you were guided down the tunnels and the subway stations, and you didn't really get to spend as much time with the characters as you would hope. And they did an unbelievable job, you know, creating these characters, but they just came and went relatively quickly. I think I made the comment in the actual review I wrote on Metro 23 about a Steven Seagal-like moment with multiple characters, because, again, if you ever watch Executive Decision, Steven Seagal died the very first, you know, 5 minutes of it. It was kind of disappointing. And that's kind of the feeling I got from Metro 2033. Wasn't a bad game. I enjoyed the experience, but it shot way below what I was thinking.
Yeah, that was a game I didn't know anything about. Was it when it came out, and people seem to have no expectations of it, so I was surprised to find out that you had expectations of it. Was it from the Stalker developers? Was that the other side?
I don't think it was.
Okay.
Well, it's a THQ game. But I don't think it was. The short story actually that it's in based off of it is a good short story. I recommend that to anybody. That's just kind of a side note, but I'm not really sure on that, so I don't want to say yes.
Do you think that they spent all their time and effort doing the world and building it graphically and kind of lost focus of the single player game part of it?
You know, I think that it just was so – it was on that line between interactive movie and video game at times, you know, and with that, you know, kind of like what we see with Modern Warfare's and those kind of single player experiences is that, you know, they do put so much time in the characters, they want to show off the capabilities of the system, and when the player has too much choice, you could miss some of that stuff, you know. And I think that's kind of where they kind of got off on a tangent, is that, you know, you were one scene after another was all this crazy stuff happening, and you know, you kind of lost kind of control of it. And not to mention the AI in that game was really, really stupid too. But again, that's a side note.
Let's go to Christina's underperformer of the year.
It would have to be Final Fantasy. It's 13, right? Sometimes track of which one.
Exactly.
Is it 12 or 13?
It's 13.
13.
Okay. My biggest beef with that game was that it was almost completely linear. When you finally put like 30 or 40 hours into it and you got to the one area that wasn't linear, there were all sorts of levels of things to fight there, so you could kind of build yourself up and unlock a lot of things in that area. But that area almost required that you spend like another 40 plus hours just there, and that really pissed me off. So I never was able to finish it. I spent many hours in that area and tried to move on and just finish the damn story. And the first major boss I ran into after that area, dead. So yeah, I guess that's your gauge, is if you can't kill everything in that area, then you can't move on. And I thought that was really lame. And the story was lame. The characters, oh God, were terrible, horrible voice acting, especially with that one Australian wannabe chick who, a terrible accent, terrible. So,
Cole, I know you played a number of hours into this game, and what turned you off to it?
Well, I dropped about 25, 30 hours in, and I didn't get to that point that Christina's talking about where it kind of opens up, but I heard about it, and that made me stop playing just because I don't want to be stuck in one area for more time than I've already spent into the game. The best thing about the game, as in all Final Fantasy games as of late, is the cutscenes, and they're pretty cool, but like she said, like I have to agree with everything she said. It was just not good. A big disappointment for all the hype that it got.
Yeah, I don't.
And for how long it took to make, shit.
Do you think the Final Fantasy series, I mean, I hate to say it, don't jump on me, but is it ready to die?
Kind of. I mean, yeah. Final Fantasy is not really a series so much to me as it is a style, you know? They've all got, like, similar elements and characters in it, but that none of the stories are interchangeable. None of the characters are interchangeable, you know? They're all separate universes, and they keep doing the same thing, I guess. And when they tried to reinvent themselves, I think this last time, they shot themselves in the foot. And I think it needs to die. I know they're just did release or are about to release the latest online one, and I think that's a great format for it. Honestly, I can't play it because I'm an addict, but. I don't mind it staying in that kind of MMO category. But yeah, as for these main games where we're waiting like 4 years for the next one to come out and then just to be let down like that, nah.
Well, especially when all the Western RPG developers are just blowing anything Japan is doing out of the water.
Yeah, I think it's a broader, it's more of the Japanese RPGs are just... I don't know. I think they're better suited, honestly, for like the DS and for handheld systems. Like, I would rather see it scaled back to the SNES era than I don't know, where they've gotten. You know, like I don't know. Really, I think Final Fantasy VII is still the peak. I started getting disinterested about halfway through Final Fantasy X, and they just haven't done anything significantly different since then, and. It's kind of sad just to I don't know, see them take it as seriously as they do anymore, because I think everybody is buying that game on nostalgia or assumption anymore, and I think this was the year that people actually started taking a critical look at the series, and you know, hopefully it'll be better for it, but they might not be listening either. So moving on to my nomination for Underperformer of the Year. Would be Metroid Other M. And disclaimer here, haven't played the game. Haven't seen the game. But, you know, anybody that's read the site can tell I probably buy too many games. And I do have, believe it or not, some sort of process of evaluating my games before I decide to purchase them. And it's been more and more difficult to buy Wii games, just I'm less motivated to do it. But Metroid is a series that I hold very close to my heart. Like I really love the origin of the series and Super Metroid, just, you know, a definitive experience, all that. Samus Aran is one of my favorite characters. And when I started reading reviews just about what they did to that character, as far as just, you know, there's a lot of some controversial reviews just calling it flat out sexist and that type of thing. I'm not going to go there, but just, you know, to make her, I don't know, to introduce a lot of characters and voice acting and really bad voice acting and storytelling into a series like that, it changed what that series was. It just missed the definition of what Metroid has become to so many people. And then at that point, I just was not interested in playing the game at all. And from everything I read and videos I saw, you know, people complain a lot about the controls, and that just seemed like people fought through the game just because it was a Metroid game. And I think if you take the title away from it and all that, that it would have been, you know, a critical disaster. I think it only floated a little bit higher just based on it being Nintendo and Metroid. But it was a game I was really looking forward to, and one of the few Wii purchases I assumed I would make even going into that month. But once the reviews came in, I'd turn my money elsewhere. And
do you have any desire to play it at all?
No. I was hesitant to even talk about it because I don't want to support it. The only reason I would want to bring attention to it would be so they wouldn't do it again. Like, they gave the game to Team Ninja, the Ninja Gaiden guys, that, you know, they don't handle characters well. They don't handle female characters well. And this is arguably the most important female character in video games, and at least historically. And it just sounds like they completely fucked it up. And Nintendo doesn't do that very much, especially with their top franchises. And but, you know, hopefully, like with Final Fantasy, they learned some sort of lesson with it. But, yeah, Robocue actually picked up the game recently, but and has offered to let me see it. But I just want to pretend it doesn't exist. That's my reaction to this game.
Does he like it?
Yeah, but he hasn't played the other ones. Like,
okay.
We've already fought about it.
Okay.
You don't even want to give it a chance.
No, and it takes a lot for me to say that, and so that's saying something.
Even if it's in a bargain bin for $5.
No.
Wow.
$2.
No, for like
somebody gives you $2 to play it.
Maybe. No, it's just it wasn't that way originally, but now that so much time has passed, like it's just, I don't, like I said, want to move on. So, moving on to Cole.
Well, you can't get any more underperforming than not even being released, and that is NBA Elite 11. It got canceled because it sucked. But I have the demo still on my Xbox that I will never delete. So EA made this huge deal about overhauling their live series, dropping the live name to try to compete with the 2K series, which has been considerably better than the live series in the past couple years. And so they decided to overhaul the series, rename it Elite, change up the control scheme, where you're like dribbling with one control stick and moving your legs with the other control stick and shooting and all that stuff. And it just was broken, and they canceled it on the eve of it being released, like maybe a week before, which is...
Yeah, people are still trying to figure out if they actually printed copies of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous for a major game that would have sold, you know, hundreds of thousands of copies just because it's a EA NBA sports game. And they just decided that they would be better served not releasing it and kind of reworking what their strategy will be going forward. So it's a huge, huge deal that it got delayed or got canceled. But, you know, we got NBA Jam out of it on disc for Xbox and PS3. So
I think we won, for sure. Big sports games players that we are.
Yes, we are all winners.
No, it's still just shocking that they got that close to being released and got canceled at that point. You just think they could have called it sooner. I'm glad they called it, but
yeah, I mean, I've seen the YouTube video where the guy's like commentating and Pau Gasol is doing
the
Jesus stance in the middle of the court and nothing's set, like the ball gets thrown to him and it just kind of drops at his feet. Like you'd think that they would have discovered that before they even released the demo, and it makes it seem like that demo and his reaction to it and well, the gaming community's reaction to it made them cause the delay or the cancellation. Yeah. And it just seems kind of weird to let it go that far before canceling it.
Yeah. It's just very, very unheard of, especially from a company as big as EA that'll stand out to me for a while because of that.
Yeah, do you think, real quick, do you think that the demo, if you don't have it, is it still available to download?
I haven't checked.
I haven't checked either.
I don't know. I'm looking at it. All right, let's move on to our overperformer nominations. Not necessarily, you know, not necessarily great games, but games that did more than you expected out of them or did more than they had to. And I'll kick us off with DJ Hero 2. Just a series, I can say a series now because DJ Hero 2 didn't sell very well and neither did the first one, that is, underperformed. Its big struggle has been, I think just the marketing of it and getting it in people's hands to get it, to give them a chance. Cause I still stand by the fact that, you know, the people that I've introduced the game to have a blast playing it. And it's just a little bit intimidating to play. But the advances they made in the 1 year since DJ Hero 1 is very – I've compared it to the leap between Rock Band 1 and Rock Band 2 and that they just made it more of a polished platform experience. And I think I was just surprised and said I say it overperforms because they didn't have to put this much effort into making it such a polished game, and it really is, and it's a shame that people haven't really given it a chance, but I can't compliment it enough, and I still kind of revere the game a little bit for and the development team. They're one of the few, you know, it's an Activision published game, and I usually, you know, we'll bash that a bit, but it's a developer that, you know, so far I respect what they're trying to do. It's Freestyle Games, and unfortunately they attached the hero name to it, and it got lumped in with all the music genre stuff that's been going on. But it really is a unique game, and there's a lot going on under the hood there that a development team has done a great job with. So
how could you say you didn't know what DJs do in your threesome? You play DJ Hero 2.
Because
you know what they do.
Because I work with a DJ, and he has seen me play DJ Hero and kind of ripped me for it. So I realize I've learned nothing about true DJing from that game. So
I disagree.
It's apparently not accurate.
So even though it didn't sell well and it was kind of a critical favorite, do you think it's done? Like the series is done after this? Or do you think there'll be another one?
I don't know.
They going to take a break and then come back? I don't. Yeah.
My gut reaction is this was their, you know, all hands on deck type of scenario. I can't see Activision supporting a third one, but who knows? Like, you know, they've got, you know, how many Tony Hawk games and how many Guitar Hero games? Maybe they see a longer tail of this than I can see, but.
Yeah, but I think the worst Guitar Hero and Tony Hawk game still double up the sales of DJ Hero 2, at least.
Yep. Ethan, what's your overperformer nomination?
Definitely Minecraft, just because this game came out of seemingly nowhere. And in my perspective, as well as I think a lot of gamers' perspectives, even though that, you know, it was released on forums back in 2009, it really hit its stride early in 2010. And, you know, the big aspect of it that makes it the overperformer for me is that it's just such a simple game. It's not a game that I would even think that I would be able to play or want to play. And it has kept so much of my attention. I honestly think that I've played it more than I've played Fallout New Vegas and Just Cause 2 combined. And the thing is this is a type of game that it's just so simple, and it kind of made me come back to, you know, kind of my roots of gaming. Gaming used to be really simple, you know, and it wasn't super complicated, and you didn't have all these different, you know, button combinations and items and all this kind of stuff. And in Minecraft, it's just you break stones and you build and you try to escape the clutches of zombies and exploding green things. And it just took me by such a surprise, you know, and games don't usually do that. I mean, they really don't. And that's why this has to be up there.
So I don't know. So you didn't have much expectation of it? I mean, I guess
I had no. It wasn't on my radar. I mean, I'll be honest with you. The first time that I actually decided to get into it was after 4chan had run their little, group attack on Minecraft, and I believe Justin, did you write that article?
Yes.
In reference to that, and I kind of linked off of that and sat on it for a couple months, and then one day I was just kind of like, I should test it out, you know, I want to see what it's all about, and it just got me. I mean, it definitely got me after that.
Yeah, I like, the whole reason I wouldn't have classified as an overperformer is just because I'm scared to death of it, because I know I'd get addicted. So it, like, I think it's everything I expect it to be, and which is really good, but at the same time, you're right, it came out of fucking nowhere. And you got to give it some serious respect for that. So I also heard it just went into beta. So you got in before that pricing came into play. But Minecraft is not going away anytime soon.
Nope.
How about Cole, your overperformer nomination?
Well, I was really excited for this game before it came out, even though I thought it might just be a Grand Theft Auto clone in the Old West. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's Red Dead Redemption. That game is so fucking amazing. I didn't realize how much I would enjoy riding a horse across desert than driving a car in a city. It just, the story is so much better than anything they ever did in Rockstar ever did in Grand Theft Auto, in any of the games, in my opinion. And I don't know, I love the Old West, and I wish there were more good quality games set there.
Yeah, you pretty much, you stole my selection, because that game, I mean, it's documented on the site and in our podcast leading up to it that I was not going to get this game. And it became one of my, you know, best experiences of the year, and it did. It came down to story, which was incredible. The characters, John Marston's already up there, one of my, you know, probably my top 10 characters of all time. And then but also, like, even the GTA stuff, the sandbox, go around, just, you know, the random encounters, and they just played so much better than the GTA 4 stuff. I found myself compelled to just, you know, if I came across one, I was going to do it, or I would get, you know, lost hunting for hours just because I could, and, you know, wanted to track down those cougars. And I really did not expect anything out of it. Like, I expected my same experience with GTA, where I played it for 4 or 5 days, and I was like, oh, I've seen everything this game's going to do, and sure, it's fun, but I don't want to waste any more time with it. And my God, did I waste a lot of time with Red Dead, and I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, the Stranger missions were, like, my favorite part of that game, and there were just little side quest things, but you met some very strange and interesting people, and it just kind of, I don't know, I never really had that experience in a game where I was, like, looking forward to the next side quest as much as I did in Red Dead.
Christina, I know you played.
I played that whole thing through. I did not get to play any of the multiplayer, I think. There was a multiplayer element, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never got a chance to play that, and I didn't play any of the add-ons. But I blew through that game pretty quickly, probably just because I wanted to, you know, I didn't think I was going to play it again. But it did have a very memorable story, and it was definitely up there on my my list of games of the year.
Do you feel that it overperformed for you, or it met expectations?
It was more than I thought, yeah, because I don't really dig westerns to begin with. I don't like desert. It bores me.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy that. I thought the music was great. I thought the environments were great. And even being set in the desert, there still was some variety there with the setting. So, yeah.
Ethan, I think you stayed away from Red Dead.
Yeah, I don't know why. Okay. that's definitely going to be a 2010 release that I jump on in 2011. I'm just so behind. But yeah, I love westerns, absolutely love westerns, and I like the first Red Dead, and I can't wrap my head around why I missed this game. I really can't. Okay. I it's almost embarrassing to talk about it. You know? I'm definitely going to get into that game next year.
I almost thought it was another Halo for you that you just were letting us talk about.
No. Not even close. I mean, I really do want to play this game. I just, you know, I've kind of ignored my consoles for a while, and I'm definitely going to get into this game, though.
Very cool.
Yeah, one last thing before we go move on. I don't usually buy a game twice, once after I get rid of it or for another console, and I'm going to buy this again for the 360 just because I want those achievement points and I just want to play through it again.
As the recording of this podcast, the DLC is on sale right now. So just a heads up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christina, your overperformer nomination.
What? Well, not a whole lot came to mind. I guess I would have to kind of settle with BioShock 2. The story let me down, and it was mainly just the last, like, chapter that let me down. I thought the characters were weak, but they added a multiplayer element, which I actually did get into for a little while, and would probably go back to eventually. It's not like a Call of Duty game for me, but Yeah, I thought it had some new things that were pretty cool, and of course the graphics are still amazing, and the environments are great, and I love those steampunk set games, and would love to see more of them.
Well, I'm gonna set you up here a little bit, because I would
please do.
I would classify this almost as an underperformer as the main game, but what changed my mind, even though, keep in mind that the collector's edition of this game is still sitting unwrapped in my living room. I have yet to play it, but I was pleasantly surprised by the reception of the DLC, and that kind of took it to an unexpected overperforming level. So,
I think that's what I was pretty negative about it after I went through it. I liked the multiplayer, but I still was kind of like that was a disappointing game of the year. But since I just recently, like within the last month or so, played that DLC. I guess my opinion has changed a bit. So if you haven't played the DLC yet, give it a shot. Cool. I think it's closer to the first game.
I'm tempted to put it in and just play the DLC, honestly.
Do it.
Do it. I will, just because you challenged me to. All right, before we dive into our leftover nominations, let's take a step back, and I want to know what games you wish you had more time to play because you don't feel like you can rate them in your lists yet. So, and Christina, we'll start with you.
I never got a chance to play Call of Duty Black Ops for some reason. I mean, I played the main game, but I did not play... I did not play any of the multiplayer, mostly because of just my work schedule right now and how addicted I got to Modern Warfare 2, which I didn't play until this year. So I was really late getting into that. Sorry, I'm starting to lose my voice here. I definitely would like to hit the multiplayer up, and I'm sure just like people were playing Modern Warfare 2 for like
over a year.
Yeah, I mean, just still nonstop. People are still playing it. So,
Does everybody have those, like, you know, small percentage of friends on your list that they, when you sign on, they're always playing Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah.
And then the day the Black Ops came out, it's like the only game they've ever played. It's funny to see. But you think you'll get sucked into the multiplayer?
From what I've heard, probably, and from what I remember of the of Modern Warfare 2, I did get pretty addicted to it. Right. And really, it was just the assholes that turned me off to the game. And
I'm sure they're not playing anymore.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, no, they probably realized. Oh my God, we should have been nicer to Jade Tiger CG, and you know.
Well,
they went out and they read a book.
Well, if you do get sucked in, let's come up with a safety word for you before you dive in. I'll use the same one for Warcraft, but we won't allow you to fall to evil. So.
I appreciate it.
Coleman, what game do you wish you could have played this year?
Enslaved Odyssey to the West. I played the demo and I really liked it, but I've heard a lot of mixed emotions about the game.
Mixed? Who's
between,
mixed?
You and Christina.
Oh, don't listen to Christina. Yeah. She's crazy.
I know.
Crazy.
I haven't played it. It was merely just my impression of it.
There was some other websites that I've read that weren't real thrilled about it. But
don't you realize I'm right?
I know you're right. That's why I want to play it.
Okay.
I think it looks amazing, and I really want to get to the story. I don't really care if the gameplay isn't that great or repetitive, but the story is the thing, and I want to know.
The thing I'll say about it being repetitive, like you won't argue that, but sometimes it's like a lesser version of the combat in Batman. Yeah, it was repetitive, but it was also satisfying. Like every time you did the killer blow, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like
and I
appreciate that. Like I just to feel like you actually just kicked that dude's ass and. Yeah, it was the 100th time he did it, but still very satisfying to get that killing blow in.
Well, Well, if it's compared to Batman in any way, that's okay with me.
Well, I did. I went there.
Yeah.
Enslaved Arkham Asylum.
Plus, it's cheap now, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some. Like I said, character action games are my favorite genre at the moment, and so I'll pay $60 for those games without blinking. But they're short, and for a lot of people, they're one time playthroughs, and they're done with them. So I can see waiting for the price to drop, but that game's pretty readily available. And honestly, you know, between Enslaved and Majin the Forsaken Kingdom, Namco Bandai has been trying to do some new stuff, some new original games, and I support them in that. So if you do find this game available that not used and can get them some money, I recommend doing it.
I also want to mention Alan Wake, that's all.
Yeah.
It's probably really cheap too. I want to play through the DLC of those, actually. It's a good reminder for me.
Has anyone played the DLC for Alan Wake? I'm just curious.
I started the first one and it's crazy. It's a lot harder. But
Is it good or is it just the same kind of repetitive, like
it's a little bit more mixed up. Like it has a lot more of like the objects attacking you rather than people, you know what I mean? And they kind of shake it up with what types, and it's a lot harder. So, okay. I think there's two of them, and I'm curious to see where the story went from there. Anyway, jumping back to my overperformer, not overperformer, that was the last time, game I wish I'd been able to get to this year. Got really, really excited about Donkey Kong Country Returns, just purely on review hype, but people are calling this one of the hardest platformers in years, and you know, a milestone for platforming games, and I think I'm ready for the challenge after playing through some XBLA games that were reminiscent of some of what Nintendo has you know, historically made. I'm interested to see where Nintendo's come from since then, and Retro Studios, the Metroid Prime guys, ended up developing this game, and but it looks like it has the spirit of the original Donkey Kong games. Donkey Kong Country 1's easily one of the best SNES games, and I didn't have time for it. And like I said, it's still that gamer score barrier of picking up a Wii game. It just feels like I'm wasting time. But this will be definitely one that I'm expecting from Santa. So hopefully when I come out of World of Warcraft, I'll be playing with some Donkey Kong. Anybody else interested in that game?
Nah.
No?
I have bad feelings towards Donkey Kong. It was just, when I played it back in the day, it was just so damn tough. Or maybe I just suck. But, that music and those bananas and Diddy Kong. Oh.
Fucking Diddy Kong. I hate Diddy Kong.
All right. I never really got into the Country series, but this game looks pretty cool and I'm all up for a challenge, so I'll probably check it out this year. But
that doesn't sound very sincere, so we'll just go ahead and move on to Ethan.
I am not sincere.
what game do you wish you had played more this year, Ethan?
I'm still not sure why I haven't gotten this game yet, because I really was looking forward to it, but Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
I don't remember that game.
Probably not.
Probably not. I was gonna say, yeah. I was like, well, how could you not? You know, I was about to get like defensive.
He's this weird PC gamer, and
yeah,
he hangs out on Steam and finds weird games. But go ahead and tell her what this is.
This game is a physics-based puzzle game. I talked about Penumbra, and it's, you know, by the same guys and the same kind of concept, and everybody was talking about how just creepy and atmospheric this game was, and I was so pumped up. I mean, I love the Penumbra games, and I just never got into it. There's been a lot of games released this year, and it came out in September, along with, you know, then following that was Dead Rising 2, and then you had Fallout New Vegas, and then I got hooked on Supreme Commander 2, and then Call of Duty Black Ops, then Minecraft.
Brain aneurysm.
For Amnesia.
No, yeah. I picked it up after your recommendation, because I think you you know, you had it as a game you're looking forward to for the rest of the year. And I played 20 minutes of it, was pretty freaked out, and immediately was like, I need to block away, like, you know, some weekend where I can stay up all night to play it, and I just want to be completely absorbed in it, and I don't want any interruptions, and that's why I've never sat down to play it again. Like, it's there, and it's waiting, I'm excited, but it hasn't happened yet.
That's funny you say that, because that's exactly how I played Penumbra. I mean, exactly how I played it. I had 8 hours, I just cranked right through it. I don't know what it is about those type of games that make me want to do that, but yeah, no, I agree with you on that.
Christina, I'd look it up. The other thing to keep in mind is it's a first person game. Like when he said it was a physics based puzzle game that, you know, sometimes reminds me of the 2D games, but it's fully, you know, engrossing first person action. So I can't wait to try it either. So hopefully I make more sense of my games in 2011. All right, now let's get into the meat here. Let's we've all listed off two or three games of just basically games of the year nominees, and we've kind of taken all these into account into our voting coming up. But let's just kind of dive into your standout games and a little bit about why you think you know it should be nominated for Game of the Year, and I'll kick us off just with my weekly, now my becoming weekly dose of World of Warcraft, but I do have to pimp World of Warcraft Cataclysm, just because it has been everything I expected and more out of the expansion. I really do feel that it is the definitive expansion out of any of the MMOs that are out there. It's the first one to, you know, take a successful MMO and completely redo everything that everybody knew about it. Like they learned a lot of lessons from the more recent expansions and applied that to the opening world scenarios and to the new in-game content, and it feels like an overall much more engrossing experience. And now's the time to get into it if you ever were slightly interested. And you know, for someone that didn't play it for a number of years, the improvements really stand out, I think, much more than people that have continued to play it. So I'm kind of glad I had that experience, that I took the break. And so far I'm successful in my only playing about 2 days a week, and it's replaced my console time so far. But the addiction, you know, I have the desire to do it, but I'm fighting it off, so... but I really am enjoying myself in that game. All jokes aside and all haters aside, Blizzard continues to be one of the best game developers out there, no question. So, anybody have any questions about that?
You know, I'm not gonna lie. I actually almost put Cataclysm down in my games that I didn't have time to play. I mean, seriously, I've been reading a lot about it, and it kind of got me. You know, World of Warcraft shakes a little bit. You know what I mean? So, because again, I was into that game. So, no, I mean, I think that it's really cool what they've done with it. I mean, it's such a. I think it's a really original idea to take something and just change everything and spice things up, because it does give people that feeling of history with the game. You know, they remember what the land used to be like before, you know, Cataclysm happened. And I think that's really cool.
It's crazy to think about, like, the game you bought 6 years ago. You can't play that anymore. Like,
no.
I realized they were changing, like, landscapes, and a lot of it was to adjust so you could have, like, flying mounts through the original lands, because they weren't built to handle it originally. But they actually went through and they basically updated the storylines of all the original quests to match where they're at now versus where the universe was 6 years ago. And that's been the thing I didn't expect, because they changed the content, the stories of those opening world dungeons that I was so familiar with. They play different now, and it's just crazy that it all feels new again. So, all right, I'm good. All right, let's move on to Ethan's first nomination.
You know, again, I can't say enough about it. Fallout New Vegas met my expectations big time. I know a lot of people had issues with it, with the bugs and that sort of thing, which, you know, a lot of those issues are being taken care of now with patches, but I'm still playing that game. I, you know, Cole mentioned, you know, thinking about a game over and over again and on a daily basis, and I really do think about this game a lot. I don't know. There's just something about the deserts, which is opposite of Christina's feelings, but I love the idea of I love the idea of, you know, what happens after the apocalypse. You know, how do we survive? What, you know, what do people really become? You know, do they become these evil nomads that just, you know, cannibalize the land, or do they try to restart society? And I love what Fallout does with that. And I love the subtle humor too. Gameplay is another aspect of it that I appreciate, because they didn't have to change a lot. Fallout 3 was already a fun game. And I know people call Fallout New Vegas, you know, an expansion, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if you expand upon something awesome, why not? You know, yeah. So
that's exactly what Assassin's Creed was.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. I mean, I don't, you know, I feel like people have this expectations of sequels that they have to be completely different, and you know, there has to be some subtle changes, and there has to be reason to play it, but. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now, that doesn't apply completely to Fallout New Vegas, because, again, as we all know, there were some quite a few bugs, so those could be fixed, and they were. But, again, I don't know. I my brother and I talk about this game, like, once a week, and it's weird because we're kind of obsessive with it, so.
Do you think it's better than Fallout 3?
Yeah, I...
You can wait till you finish it to answer that, but
I need to wait till I finish it, because again, the thing with Fallout 3 is I just spent so much time with it, and I haven't spent that much time with New Vegas yet.
Okay.
And I haven't. It's just I feel
TBA.
Like, you know, Fallout 3, I had to keep pumping content out of it. You know, and I went and I just traversed the land of Washington D.C. over and over and over again, and Fallout New Vegas has enough content that you don't really necessarily have to do that. So I'm not to that level of obsession quite yet with it, but I think it could. I mean, it really could stand out above it.
Well, when you're in the middle of your Fallout hangover after you do finish this, we'll have to revisit your comparison of the two games at that point.
Definitely.
Christina, your first nomination.
Halo Reach. Really surprised me with the multiplayer, because oddly the campaign, which I always love more than the online first person I shot you in the head sort of experience, I just love the co-op and the main game, but this one let me down a little bit with the campaign story. Like, I really didn't give a flying fuck about the characters, but
Even when they're wearing jetpacks?
Even when they're wearing jetpacks. But it was still really fun to play co-op with people, and the multiplayer experience was new. It felt new, and just those few things that they added really did it for me. So I think it was, I mean, supposedly being the last Halo game, which it won't be, but the last Halo game under oh god,
Bungie,
thank you. I think they went out all right, so
yeah. I can't, you know, or the view on it. I don't think they could have made it any better, but like I said, there wasn't a lot of, you know, a lot of things wrong with Halo, and not a lot of room for improvement to make it, like. You know, that's why I'm kind of curious with the Fallout comparison, like, to see if it really is that much better than Fallout 3. That, you know, I feel like Halo's gotten enough attention that, like, I wouldn't throw it in my games of the year list, but it's still a game I really respect and a developer I really respect, and, you know, a great experience this year. Cole, you kind of had a comeback to Halo.
Yeah, I kind of feel the opposite way Christina does. I like the single player and didn't really like the multiplayer that much. I played a shit ton of it in Halo 2. Like, we played LAN parties, and that was really my first introduction to Halo. And for me, even though it's been quite a bit of time has passed, I still think it's too similar to that Halo 2 experience for me. So I kind of got bored with it quickly. Single player, on the other hand, I kind of write in my top games of 2010 that you'll be seeing on the site this week that, you know, like, there was a couple of moments where I was like, I felt myself tied to the characters, as surprisingly as that is, and I don't get that from games a lot. So
would you say you gave a flying fuck?
Yeah, I did. And you know, and we all know like that what the outcome of the story was going to be, but it was just like how they got there that I was like, oh, that was pretty cool. So.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think Christina, I think I was a sucker for when they did tie it in, like. Those last two missions when you see how it's going to bridge into Halo 1, right. I don't know. I like that stuff.
But. Yeah, I think just they were all, you're playing with all new characters, and it was cool to have a team, but like I don't think they developed the characters at all. I mean, it was just like, okay, you've got the girl who's kind of a bitch, you've got the big guy who's actually kind of nice, and then the leader,
the assassin,
the snipe, yeah, the dick, the assassin who doesn't say anything except like
Dick. I want a TV show called Dick the Assassin. Sorry,
Talker Dick.
All right, I do have a very important question now, Ethan. What do you think of Halo?
Halo can. I was gonna
get
say
it out, man. Really you haven't it. You've been a good sport. Just go for it.
I have no interest in Halo. It just doesn't do anything for me at all. I don't think I'll ever get back into it. I played 1 and 2, and again, it just I don't know. There's nothing about it that just gets me excited. It doesn't.
I just felt. You know? Oh, I think we just owed you that little moment. So.
Yeah, thank you. I'm okay now.
So, I mean, it's all about, these are nominations, it's all about discourse, so don't be afraid to jump in and say your opinion's wrong, because those are beliefs I can get behind. All right, my next game, since I had a few more, I'm going to keep jumping in here. Actually, on the iPhone, I just felt like, you know, I spent a lot of time playing games on my iPhone, and something had to come out of it, and I actually chose Cut the Rope, just because it's more out of respect than how much time I've spent with it, because it's hard, and I like to play iPhone in very short increments, but just there's so much going on physics wise in that game that it's much more impressive to me than some of the other similar physics games, and even though Angry Birds came out last year, I still would rate it above Angry Birds, even though I play that more. If that's how the logic works in my head with these nominations. That I just respect Cut the Rope more, and it stands out as a better example of what the iPhone should be used for games. And God damn it, I love that little candy monster. He's fucking adorable, and I have a soft spot for Om Nom, and love the fact that they named him Om Nom. But that, you know, there are a handful of games. I even debated, you know, recommending Infinity Blade. It might actually go down in history as a more important game. But like right now, for what the device is, for what the iPhone is, I think Cut the Rope's the perfect game. So, all right, moving on to bigger, better things. Coleman, your first nomination.
I'm about to end this discourse right here and right now. There was a game that came out all the way at the beginning of 2010 in January. Mass Effect 2. Done. Over. This discussion.
I disagree.
Yeah, I can't disagree because everybody's already seen my list, and I completely agree with Cole.
Oh my god, like it's easy, like. Enough. You know that feeling you get when everything is just right in the world? That's what you get when you're playing Mass Effect 2. Or that's what I got anyway.
I like a different spin on that is like it had a lot of those "this is why I play video games" moments, and this is like the culmination of video games and everything we've learned from them, and everything developers could have, you know, taken over the years. This is the best product they've made with all of this knowledge, and it just that's how I describe the experience for going above and beyond. But as a newcomer to the Mass Effect series this year, Cole,
Yes.
You know, this wasn't the... I don't think this was the system seller for you. I mean, Shadow Complex was
a lot of the
reason why you bought the system. But, you know, what were your expectations going into Mass Effect 1? We talked a lot about Mass Effect early on in the in the history of the podcast, but you haven't really, you know, dove into it with your two cents here.
No, like when... when Mass Effect... try to gather my thoughts. It's a big topic. When Mass Effect 1 came out, I was only a PlayStation 3 owner, and I'd always want to get into that game. And I was like, man, I know like that game is going to be huge, and I'm going to fall in love with it and all that stuff. And, you know, I just kind of pushed the 360 off to the side and concentrated on PS3. As I got bored with the PS3 and decided this year to get in 360 when they announced the black S model, and Mass Effect 2 had come out, I was just like, all right, I basically bought Mass Effect 1 so I could get to Mass Effect 2 after reading all the reviews and all the hype surrounding that game. I knew that it was one of the greatest games to come out this year or ever. And I wanted to get through the first game so I could enjoy the whole story and not just, you know, play the second one. That being said, I'm glad I did.
Christina, did you? I don't even remember. Did you play it?
I did, and it's the strangest thing. Like, I looked at it, and like, this is a very polished game. I don't care. I played it all the way through, like the way I was describing, the way I go through these like free RPGs. I'm playing it like mindlessly. I don't care about the conversations. I'm skipping everything. I cannot tell you a single event that happened in Mass Effect 2, and I played that from start to end, and I think I found every little hidden area. Not so sure about the downloaded content, if I did any or...
Why do you play video games?
I don't know. It's so strange. My attitude towards a lot of games this year has been very odd. I've been very...
Achievement.
I don't know. I guess I feel a little bored by it.
Yeah,
they all seem to be doing the same thing, and I'm expecting something new and groundbreaking and exciting, and it seems like the same RPG formula, just in a different, shinier package. And although, like if you dig sci-fi, Mass Effect is an awesome game, and I love sci-fi, but I've also played so many friggin' RPGs that all are starting to feel the same, that now it's just, like, time killer, and I really don't care anymore, sucks.
My argument against that is you love Halo. Like everything you said could be said about Halo. Like it's the same thing.
But Halo was my first.
Okay, it's your first love.
My introduction to my first person shooters, and it was the first really epic game that I'd ever played. That was the first game I had played like that. So, I love the series to begin with, and.
Sometimes you need to break up with your first.
Well, ODST, man. I dumped ODST. That was a royal turd.
Right, let's stop talking about Halo. We've talked about Halo way too much.
Yeah. Ethan wants to hear us talk more. But I actually you know, I played Mass Effect 2 right when it came out and was absorbed in it, and that was, you know, months before we got to the site. So I haven't really been able to say much about it, but I do get where Christina's coming from. As far as, like, RPG elements and gameplay, it isn't groundbreaking in that regard. And if you don't get into the characters and you don't get into the universe, then there's really not much for you. Like, it's just a polished action RPG, you know? But the fact that, starting in Mass Effect 1, end of Mass Effect 2, that I went in and read every entry in the Codex, you know, I tried to explore every possible avenue of every conversation. I was just completely absorbed in this and the universe. And, you know, I want to see them do more things with Mass Effect. Like they just have set up such an elaborate universe. It can go anywhere, and it's really interesting. And it's really, I don't know. It's even to some regards really well connected to, you know, current, you know, to reality, and that you can see, like, you know, if there's actually mass relays out there and we get this technological advancement, like the fact that they did tie it back into Earth is really cool to me. And but again, the big difference with Mass Effect 2 is I thought Mass Effect 1 was a great game, but it had a lot of issues. And I did not expect them to fix the issues for Mass Effect 2. I just thought, you know, oh, here's another BioWare RPG, kind of in the evolution of the Knights of the Old Republic series. I love those games. And I will, you know, I saw this game at PAX and I was like, oh, I'll play that game. I'll get to it. But they really did. It's like they took the feedback from the first one and applied, like, the biggest criticisms. They fixed all of them. And that became Mass Effect 2, tightened up the story, tightened up the action, and it just was, you know, a great experience, and I can't wait for more Mass Effect. So,
I'm going to make a new resolution right now. I think part of the reason why I've been so disappointed with games this year is because of my addiction to it and wanting to blow through it so quickly and just see everything all at once, and not spread it out over a few weeks or a few days, I think I'm destroying the game experience for myself. So if you're blowing through it all in like a couple nights, you're not going to care about the story and you're not going to care about the characters. And yeah, I didn't read a single one of those friggin' codec things in Mass Effect. And so I don't know anything. I can't name you a single planet or alien or anything in there. So, yeah.
The only opinion I have never heard on Mass Effect 2, Ethan, you do a good job of keeping quiet in the games you haven't played, but, you know, do you have a passing interest in this game? Yeah. Like,
I played Mass Effect 1, and I actually rented it. I don't know why I stopped playing, you know? And as you guys are talking, it's not that I was being quiet because I didn't want to say anything, but I'm so frustrated with all the games that I have not played that I should have played and I know that I like. And this is up there with Red Dead Redemption, most definitely. But like Cole said, I'm going to have to go back and play Mass Effect 1 before I can get into Mass Effect 2. And I feel like I don't have enough time.
Yeah, that's a big time commitment.
That really should be a point of pride, though, because that just means that you have way more of a life than us.
He's just playing other games. He's not.
I was gonna say, yeah, I'd love to agree with you on that, Christina, but I just have like 90 games and I'm like popping between, you know. So
I'm very proud of my.
Whatever, nerd.
To your New Year's resolution, Christina, yeah, I challenge you to figure out why you play video games next year and do some analysis on the site with that.
God, but, this is getting way too serious.
Video games are serious. I don't know who told you they weren't. Cole's going to have to take off on us here in a little bit, but we'll jump to his final nomination before we keep going as a group here. But what else you got, Cole?
Well, I really don't consider this the game of the year, but maybe. It was kind of surprising for me is the NBA Jam actually coming out on in a retail copy for the 360 and well, all three of them, I guess, yep. Since they're supposed to be downloadable on the PS3 and 360. I have not purchased this game yet, but I really want to get into it so Justin and I can have some online battles like I'm sure we used to on the Codes. Super Nintendo, and he's going to piss me off. But NBA Jam is one of my favorite sports games of all time, and when I first heard that it was coming out, I just couldn't wait to get back into it, and it looks awesome, even though it's, you know, it's the same old thing that we know and love and with some things added to it, and
maybe there's a lot of nostalgia to that, but I think I will remember that the new NBA Jam came out in 2010. Like, yeah. Regardless of the quality of the game, like it's kind of almost more of a standout news story. And you know they executed it well enough that it is certainly a memorable sports arcade title. And you know, supports the franchise well. They did well by the predecessors. So.
That's good to hear. I can't wait to get into it, and hopefully Santa will bring me this.
All right, Cole, you just let us know when you got to take off, but we'll keep moving on through here.
I'm gonna go right now.
All right, thanks for joining us, Cole.
Yes, sorry.
Back home.
I will talk to you guys later.
All right, see you
later. See ya.
All right, Ethan, let's jump to your next nomination.
You know, this was, there's a lot of games I played this year based on recommendations from the Horrible Night crew, and this was definitely one that Justin, you had talked about. Just Cause 2, I downloaded, you know, on one of those outrageous Steam deals, and there was just something about the fun of the game, you know. Obviously, the story wasn't great, you know, but that wasn't really the meat and potatoes of this game. There was just so much to do, so much to explore, so many, you know, objectives to complete. And it wasn't that those objectives were necessarily new or different from what other games have had done, but just the way that you achieve those objectives and just the craziness that ensued. And I just had so much fun with this game. And again, it's another one of those games that totally caught me off guard because Just Cause wasn't even on my radar. And Just Cause 2, you know, I'd seen previews of it, but again, I didn't think much of it. And I just got into that game, and it caught a hold of me big time.
Yeah, it was the reason that I wasn't all that excited about Red Dead, because I had so much senseless fun with Just Cause 2. I was like, I don't want those boundaries back. Like, it was like the true inspiration, true successor to like the original Grand Theft Auto games for me, like 1 and 2, that you just, I don't know, you just fucked shit up and it was fun.
And I think senseless fun. That's what it was. And I think that, you know, I play so many games and, you know, looking at like the Fallout New Vegas is every decision I make, I'm like, I shouldn't kill this person because it'll make me evil and this and that and all that kind of stuff. And Just Cause was like Just Cause 2 was basically like, ah, fuck it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I love that feeling. You know, I felt that there was a lot of freedom too, and I could just chill out and cruise around in helicopters, and the landmass itself is just, I'm still so impressed by it. I mean, it's just,
it's huge and it's fucking gorgeous.
It's well done. Yeah, it's not like a bunch of filler, you know, and I mean, there's mountain towns, there's beachside resort. I mean, it's amazing how much they put into that game.
It came out of nowhere, and yeah, like that's where I started thinking in my list. Like, you can't be critical of some of these games because, yeah, you can pick that game apart for just, you know, the story and the characters are just stupid.
Yeah.
That's not why I played that. It's an important game in my game library right now because it when I play that game, it satisfies a certain need for me of just to be able to go and have fun with the video game, and that not enough games do that. And you know, there were other games I was expecting to fill that void, and Just Cause 2 just blew all of them away. I'm looking at you, Crackdown 2.
Yeah, Crackdown.
Christina, did you try this at all?
I don't know anything about it. It's strange. Right. I didn't know anyone who bought it, or I didn't hear
I was kind of fading out talking about it as we got the site going, but was really into it. Like, all you need to know about the game is your character has unlimited parachutes and unlimited grapple hooks, and you can use that to get around anywhere. And just, I don't know, it's, you don't even have to play the missions. Like, I just like doing stunts and like seeing how far I can fall and use my parachute the last second to do something, or see how much chaos I can cause. And it's
closest to a Crackdown kind of game.
It satisfied everything that Crackdown 1 had me plus more. Like, it's why I didn't even consider buying Crackdown 2, because I was just like, it can't touch Just Cause 2. Like,
yeah.
At least with Red Dead Redemption and Grand Theft Auto, they're trying to, they're ground a little bit more realism, but like,
yeah,
for pure just arcadey, you know, chaos fun, like Just Cause 2 just can't top it. So and last thing before we move on from that, Ethan, did you play around with any of the mods on there? That's the one thing I couldn't get on the 360 version.
No, you know, I didn't, just because I just felt there was so much to the game. I had this weird, I don't know what it is, but I used to do a lot of mods, but I almost feel like once you load a mod, it's no longer, I feel like maybe it screws around with the gameplay too much, and it takes away from what the game was meant to be. I don't know why I feel like that so much right now. I don't know what it is. I was afraid to get into
mods. You don't want to break the true experience.
Exactly.
I get that, but I would not be afraid to break it with Just Cause 2.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, moving on to my next nomination. Just a couple more left here. Lots of great downloadable titles this year. Surprisingly, The standout's one of the ones I played the least, but again, it's kind of like a cut the rope scenario where I just have incredible respect for the game, and that's Super Meat Boy. And it was one of those moments where I had the benefit of downloading and playing this game in front of a friend that had never seen it before, and I'd seen some videos, I was kind of prepared, but just the introduction of the Super Meat Boy character and Dr. Fetus, his enemy, and just how they tell this story in preparation for the game, that was a lot of fun to witness to somebody that had just no idea what I was about to play. But the platforming in this game is fucking incredible. It's incredibly difficult. There's tons of levels, tons of characters, tons of replay value, and for anybody that played N Plus, it had a very similar platforming feel for me in that as soon as you mess up in the game, it's really you can restart the level really, really quickly. Just a button press for replay. No loading screens. Just go time and time and time again, trying to trial and error to get through a lot of the harder levels. And the other funny thing is when you're playing through and you die, it records all of your lives. So when you finally get through, it basically does a replay of all of your runs through at the exact same time. And so you'll see your gruesome deaths like happen in the same spot, over and over again as your guy is actually getting going successfully through the level. And just some of the presentation value of that just was kind of unexpected and elevated the game for me. That it really, it's a very simple looking 2D game and easy to dismiss. It was discounted right when it was released, and so I have a feeling towards the end of the year people overlooked this game and were looking towards, Limbo and Lara Croft and games they were a little bit more familiar with earlier in the year. But Super Meat Boy just completely blew me away, and if you ever get the chance to play it, it's highly addictive, and it calls back to kind of like the core gamer and all of us that, started with Super Mario Brothers and watched platforming advance and become challenging. And it's another game I'm proud to have in my library to fill that platforming void. Did anybody give that a shot?
Did not. I don't know anything about it.
I actually played it when it was in its browser form, so I have not played it since it's been converted. But I liked it then. It is really tough. I mean, it is most definitely really, really tough. And I think it's on sale right now on Steam, so I may pick it up.
Yeah, it is really ridiculously cheap on Steam. And be interested in, playing it with a gamepad versus the keyboard, too, because I think they adapted the controls really well for the 360. But recommend checking that one out. Now, Christina, your final nomination.
If you guys aren't sick of me talking about this game, my game of the year for sure would have to go to Heavy Rain. I thought it was the most creative. It had the most captivating story. And as to our reply to all discussion last week what was the name of that game?
One Chance.
That's exactly what I was looking for. It's just like a game that everyone's going to have a different experience. I always thought it'd be kind of cool it would be impossible to do this, but I thought it'd be awesome if, you pick up a game and your copy of the game is different from someone else's. Like, you're going to get different experiences than someone else. And,
pretty sure GameStop's trying to do that with their pre-order bonuses, but...
Well, no. I mean, I'm not talking about a hat that your avatar wears. I'm talking about, actual events in the game are completely different. No, I just thought it was beautiful, and it was a captivating story. It was just, had it been a movie, it probably would have been my favorite movie of the year.
But yeah, it's so in between mediums in that regard.
It really is.
But
I enjoyed it.
I guess reading your review, I thought you had a much more mediocre response to it. I guess I was kind of, I didn't feel like you were, really overly impressed with the game. Like, I thought you felt it was competent and a memorable experience, but not
the actual interaction what you were actually doing with your controller was really boring. That was the weakest part of the game, was just hitting X at a certain time and hitting triangle at a certain time. That kind of stuff is, I mean, that takes me back to, like, friggin' Parappa the Rapper, you know? And I thought we had kind of evolved past that in video games, and so I was kind of upset to see that. But at the same time, I know why they did that, and it allowed for those kind of interesting camera angles and those interactive cinematics. And that's why I thought it would almost be better as kind of this whole new medium, like this interactive movie, where rather than use a controller, maybe just use a DVD remote, and depending on what you push, which won't display like cheesy graphics on the screen while you're watching, you'll get a different outcome.
It harkens back to like my original interest in like choose your own adventure books, and this is finally somebody's kind of trying to implement those in a video game, and that's something I've been interested in a long time. The other thing I wanted to ask about your experience with this game. I was just gonna add, like, I think they're really on to something. They haven't nailed it yet. It sounds like they're getting their storytelling down, and their branching story arcs and that sort of thing. But if they could figure out how to make the gameplay interesting without being boring or difficult, I think that's the struggle they're gonna have. I forget the name of them right now, but will rise to that next level, and I think these games will be a little bit more mainstream. But I still think there's a bit of a barrier of entry to Heavy Rain, just because, I don't know, I think hardcore gamers will get bored by it.
Definitely. I wanted to show people, but at the same time, like, I figured, okay, well, you got to start from the beginning. And the first chapter is very slow. It just deals with the introduction of the father and his sons, and you're just playing with them. I realize they wanted a certain level of realism in the games, but, like, you don't need a program in that your character can sit down in every single chair that is in a scene. Like, I don't get a whole lot of enjoyment out of sitting down. Oh, this is so realistic.
I need to move over one cushion to my right.
I can sit on... Exactly. Like, you know what? I don't like sitting on the left side of the couch. I'm going to sit on the right side of the couch.
That's good gameplay.
I have a choice. There's choice. It may be all shit, but look at that choice. Anyway.
The last thing I wanted to say is I think there is an amazing game somewhere in between Heavy Rain and Alan Wake. Like, neither one of them hit their ultimate potential, but, man, if those can kind of come together, I think there's a whole new genre waiting for gamers. So that stuff excites me, but I just, from an outsider's perspective, didn't look like Heavy Rain hit all the marks it needed to.
Did anyone else play it? I feel like I'm the only one who talked about it.
I played the demo, I plan on getting to it in 2011. I haven't gotten to it. So
I'm really curious. Once one of you finally like plays it all the way through, I'd really be curious as to what you'd think.
I might take a stab at it. I'm curious about it, to say the least. So
waiting for a price drop, and I'm sure we'll come after you as soon as we get.
I got it used on Amazon for I think it was about 30, maybe 25 a while back. So it may have dropped since then.
Yeah, 2011. Here we go.
Yep.
All right, last Game of the Year nomination, and then we'll wrap this up. I just wanted to mention another early release in the year that surprised me, and kind of got mixed reception among some of my friends that played it. But for whatever reason, Darksiders hit all the marks with me, and it kind of struck to a theme that Christina and I have battled back and forth on a bit. That honestly, a lot of the gameplay in Darksiders isn't original. It's all borrowed. It's got elements of Zelda, Portal, I can't even think of the other ones off the top of my head. Devil May Cry, like, very character action driven, more kind of Legend of Zelda in its speed of gameplay and that sort of thing. But I really like the art style of the game. It was designed by a comic book artist, and they're taking this series to at least, you know, at least a sequel, possibly a trilogy. And is another game I didn't have any expectations of, but got it, like, criticisms aside, it was a lot of fun to play. And, you know, unoriginality aside, it was a lot of fun to play. But it was, you know, it also wasn't broken. A lot of those games that borrow gameplay elements don't implement them correctly. And this didn't have that problem. And it was an interesting story. You know, it's a lot of, you know, Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, a lot of heaven and hell doing battle. And so, you know, I like that type of stuff. I like the comic book feel. It had the art style actually reminds me of a more advanced engine from World of Warcraft. It's like the characters are very stylized. And so it doesn't have the best graphics, but it all works. It all goes together in a very seamless little package. And it really surprised me. It was a lot of fun to play. And it was a game that I didn't put down when I played it, and that says a lot to me. I will take breaks. Cole mentioned it earlier. Sometimes I'm afraid to finish games, but I really wanted to see this one through, and I can't wait for the sequel to come out and to see more, especially from the designer of this game, to see what else they come up with. And any fans of Zelda, like I said, it was a more matured Zelda adventure experience. Which is something has been lacking in that series for me. Like Twilight Princess, I didn't even get through. And that's kind of where I started to notice that this game stood out a little bit more to me, because I did see this all the way through. And for me to still remember it, like I said, when it came out around, you know, Mass Effect and some other great games towards the beginning of the year, that it held up towards the end of the year, just... And says that game actually did matter a little bit to me. So,
yeah, I think I'm going to take a stab at that game. I'm going to assume that the price has kind of come down on Steam sometimes this month. So, you know, I was turned off by the demo, but I think, like you had said, Justin, the demo didn't really start you off in a really great...
No, it starts you off in a very weird, like, a lot of, like, the setup plot has happened, and it's just...
Yeah.
It's kind of bizarre where they... And I didn't like the demo, but I had played the game at PAX and it was fun, and that's what saw me through. And I saw, like, it was getting mainly sevens and eights in its scores. Like, nobody was going, you know, nines and tens with it, but it seemed solid enough. It did things well enough. And, you know, sometimes those games, you know, for specific people like myself, they just turn out to be really fun for that person. And that's what Darksiders was to me. So,
yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, so these are kind of our official nominations of our podcast crew, but we've also got the rest of the curse have been throwing out their nominations, and we've been deliberating offline. And so next week on the site, on horriblenight.com, be on the lookout for our official Grimmy nominations for our Games of the Year 2010. Got a few different categories heading your way. So we're going to roll out the nominations, and then on next week's podcast – and on the site, we will reveal the winners of the Grimmies for 2010. And also next week on the show, we're going to start taking a look forward to the games of 2011. Because, you know, Dead Space 2 comes out in January, and we're off and running again. There's no breaks in gaming anymore. So be looking forward to that next week. And but as far as the rest of the site goes, we're going to kind of take a week off. We won't be writing a lot of articles, but we'll just be posting our Games of the Year content, and be ready to hit the site full force first week in January. But we will have a new podcast episode for you next week and the following week as usual. Really appreciate everybody that stuck with us for the first half of the year. It's been a lot of fun for us, and really appreciate you listening. And if you have any input as far as to your Games of the Year, there's still time to let us hear your side of things. So reach out through our contact form or hit us up on Twitter, and we'll give you a shout out on the show. Speaking of shout outs, as usual, before we take off, just if you guys have noticed anything in the games industry that you want to point out, let's go through those, starting with Christina.
I've got a shameless plug here, but my a friend of mine, a couple people I know, they made this kind of Mario sort of side scroller game for the iPhone, and I designed the main character and a couple other critters, and did a little bit of the animation for the characters in that, and it just got approved by Apple, and it's up on the store now for like 99 cents, and it's just neat to, you know, it's not a whole lot to it. It's Mario. It's like classic Mario, but it's just neat to see something, you know, actually get up there and be selling, and so, and it was neat to be a part of it. So cool.
Yeah,
it's called
I was
Lars.
And what is Lars? What is it? What's the rest
Lars
of the title?
Is I cannot remember. It's like so friggin' long. It's like Lars Super Action Danger Adventure International Mystery
Lizard
Man. And I did not come up with the title. I didn't even get to name the character that I designed, and I hate the name Lars for the record. I hate. He's a chameleon. He's wearing board shorts. He's in the jungle. He's not a German secret agent. So anyway,
the one thing I wanted to say about it is I've played a little bit of it and liked it, and always happy to see your artwork kind of come to life. But the controls on it are done really well for like platforming games on the iPhone have annoyed the shit out of me. And like you guys, I mean, they simplified it. You know, basically got kind of a left and a right analog and a jump button. But it's simple. It's easy to play, and that, I think that really caught me off guard. That it, I think they're onto something with those controls. So just wanted to point that out there.
The controls were something that in beginning, like a lot of the initial feedback before the game was released was that like they were originally invisible, and that was a pain in the ass. Especially because he had programmed in some speed issues, so it depends on how far left or how far right you move your thumb.
Yeah.
But not knowing where those things are was really irritating, so he just added a little ghost image, and suddenly like it clicked, and
that's really cool.
Play it. So, yeah.
99 cents. Help Jape Tiger and her friends out. So, Ethan, what's going on in the industry that you care about?
I definitely care about this, but yeah, I talk about Steam all the time. And if you're new to PC gaming, or you're getting back to PC gaming, or you, I don't know, all kinds of different scenarios, but Steam is going nutty for the next 30 days, and they are selling, not 30 days, excuse me, up until January 2nd, I believe. They are selling games, packages of games, suites of games at crazy prices. Check it out most definitely, especially if you want to pad your library up a little bit, or you're going after that Steam achievement record. And also wanted to say hello to Matt Hiddle, my buddy in Montana, who is a big fan of the podcast, despite not really playing video games all that often.
What's up, Matt?
Hi, Matt.
Then I'll get us out of here with just one trailer I wanted to point out, a game that I'm very excited about next year. This Bulletstorm, and every trailer for that game gets more and more ridiculous. But they did they interviewed the developers of the game, and they were talking about the descriptions of the characters, and they just used the most foul language as possible to match up with all the language in the game. I mean, like Duke Nukem can't hold a candle to the characters of Bulletstorm, and I know it's childish, but it's so damn funny to me. And, like, I've just never heard such creative use of phrases like cocksucker since Deadwood made it popular again. And, like, they do, you know, curse word combinations that I've never heard before. I don't even think half of them make sense, but they're goddamn funny. And so I'll post a link to the trailer. Didn't really want to post on the site because it's definitely not safe for work or, you know, kids or that kind of thing. But it's, you know, take it for what it is. It's the game has a great sense of humor about itself, and it's going to be ridiculous. And it'll turn some people off, but I love it. So, all right, games of the year nominations in the bank, and we will be back next week with the winners and our 2011 discussion. So, again, thanks everybody for listening and reading horriblenight.com. We appreciate you. Want to definitely hear your feedback as you have your own thoughts, and shoot us emails, shoot us info through the contact page, or hit us up on Forum Spring or Twitter. We're all over the place, looking to hear from you. But until then, we will see you next time. Thanks, Ethan and Christina, for joining me.
Yep.
Love you guys.
Later.